from UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
And today I am Ben. Most importantly, you are you, which makes this stuff they don't want you to know. This is an interesting episode, ladies and gentlemen, because we are touching on something topical. We are touching on something controversial. And because we are doing something topical, something specific, we thought it best to arrive at the universal via the specific. And one thing we would like to start out with is a question for yourself and for the three of us. You guys, Noel, Matt, any military service? Any military members of your family?
Not really anything to speak of here. My grandfather could not go to war when he was a younger man because he had a heart condition. My father ended up not having... I think he was officially drafted, but he apparently didn't have to do it as well because of things like that.
I spent a lot of time on a military base when I was younger. My father was the choir director on a base in Germany where I was born. So that's about the extent of it, though.
Yeah, and I have a military in my family, as you guys know. And we are in an office in Atlanta still these days, but we used to be in a very different office, and we used to meet all sorts of interesting characters. Is that correct?
Yes, several people that we would meet around the cafeteria area and the gathering areas in the space. And there was one particular person that I don't want to name who this person is, but...
Make up a name.
Gregory was... Okay. He was in something that I would say is similar to the Oath Keepers, a group of ex-military human beings who are like-minded and view... certain social situations that are occurring to perhaps, I don't know.
The Patriot Movement. That's what we're talking about.
It's the Patriot Movement, but this particular gentleman was worried about collapse of society. And he conveyed to me that his group is ready in case anything happens. There are a group of him, of people like him that are ready to defend the United States and its people.
I encountered him once as well. And the advice he gave to me was, sell everything you have and get a Humvee. So that's realistic. Yeah.
But what about the gas, Gregory? I would ask. Yes, survivalists, preppers, people who believe that the collapse of Western civilization is somehow imminent, people who believe that the most logical course of action now is to, as the Boy Scouts say, be prepared, right?
Yes. And people in this group have the background to know what to do in those kind of situations, like exactly how to ration things and gather the correct, needs for food and water and all those kind of things, and be able to defend themselves.
And also build the infrastructure needed to house said stockpiled
items, yeah.
Weapons, food, water.
And protect it. Stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. So this is... In the U.S., this is something that is often called... Would you say that Gregory was a member of a militia? Or would you say that he was simply a survivalist in like-minded company?
I can't say for sure because I don't know how much they actually met or meet up and how much they prepare together. I would say if he was in a militia, it would need to be a fairly organized thing.
Yeah, and that's a question that I have. I mean, the term militia seems pretty open-ended and kind of bandied about in several different contexts. I mean, I guess I think of a militia as being a group that's very organized and tied to a certain area. Mm-hmm. What would you say the official definition of militia is, Ben?
Well, Noel, the interesting thing about that question is that there are a couple of different terms for militia. If you go back to the etymology, it means a military force raised from the civil population to supplement a regular army. So there is a difference between a military and a militia in that people can be career military members. Yes, you can be a almost said journalist. That's true. In the U.S. Army, you can be a journalist. You could be an admiral, right, in the Navy, and it will be your career. You could start as a private, work your way up to general. A militia member, on the other hand, would be someone who, let's say, what's a regular day-to-day job?
Accountant.
An accountant, perfect. A CPA. CPA gets the call. CPA receives word that the redcoats are coming, etc. And then the CPA doffs his green visor, throws away the pen and the number two pencil, opens the lockbox behind the painting where he takes out his AR-15 and drops his flak jacket on, slaps a flag or something across it, and then off to war. The first mention of a militia in the U.S. Constitution occurs in Article 2 of the Bill of Rights. In Article 2, there is, and I quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. In the modern age, that is one of the most controversial aspects of the U.S. legal system, right? The ownership of guns.
Oh, sure, especially now, where the perception is that homicide rates are skyrocketing and people are dying everywhere. And there's also a perception that the more guns that exist there, that exist anywhere in a community from one side equals safer communities, right? When you, right. But the reality, unfortunately, at least that I was listening to NPR this week and they're speaking with some police officers and they're talking about in Texas, the new open carry laws.
Mm-hmm.
And they're super worried. Law enforcement there is extremely worried because the more saturated any community is with weapons, the more homicides occur.
And also the stories that come out about these open carry places usually involve somebody shooting themselves in the foot. Or there was a story that I remember where a woman was shoplifting something from a Home Depot and running out into the parking lot and somebody shot him in the parking lot. Mm. You know, some for like trying to steal some pallets of wood. You know what I mean? Like, is that the kind of vigilante justice we need? You know, I mean, come on.
Well, who you know.
Anyway.
It's insane. The world out there is insane.
And the interesting thing to me is this is not a problem you see as much in places where there are fewer guns or where guns are more difficult to obtain.
Also, there's a slight disconnect and I know this is a side note, guys, so I'll keep it brief, but there is a slight disconnect with the notion of gun ownership automatically equating to insane levels of violence, which there are insane levels of violence, right? What's interesting is that there are other countries which have similar ratios of gun ownership, yet these countries do not exhibit the same level of violence associated with ownership of firearms. However, another thing that is vitally important, you know, if you go back far enough in history, every great institution has blood on its hands. And I know that can be controversial to people to say that about people's favorite things, right? The country, the state, the church, whatever it might be. The banks, if you get far enough back.
Or if you parse it down far enough.
Right, right.
I think it's important here to say we've talked about this many times before when we talked about gun control laws and a couple other topics that touched on this subject, that the right to own a gun is very, so deep-seated in the American people, and that the history of that, and the need to have a way to protect your family and yourself, I can't discount that. Even sure. No matter what my views are, no matter how crazy liberal I once was, and you know, still slightly am, I cannot discount that fact that I think is extremely important still today. Even
I agree completely, but it just almost seems like the language in the Constitution, the way people internalize that and make it part of their cultural identity, mm-hmm. that is unique to the United States, I think, because of that language, because it's such an ingrained part of our identity. And I think people take that really seriously. And some people maybe take it a little too seriously.
Well, I will point out in this conversation, I think you guys are making great points. I will point out that the thing that later became the U.S., the United States of America, and YouTube listeners who love the way we say United States here, please hear me hit the T, United States of America.
It's funny. I think they've flip-flopped now. Now they're like, why are you enunciating that so much?
I think it's just, we paid too much attention to the comments.
Yes.
And fed the fire. Anyway, the point being what now the progenitors of what would later become this country started out as an invasive force, right?
Yeah.
Literally the most disease riddled, violent people that actual residents of the continent had ever met.
Right? Yes.
And these people who came across, you know, the Pinta, the Nina, the Santa Maria and all that jazz. These people were vastly outnumbered in many ways, right? It is a myth to say that the land was unpopulated and wild and had like five other people just hanging out. We know history proves that is untrue. These groups, especially the groups that came from England, were not very well funded in a lot of ways, right? There was not a British military force, meaning that these people who were not soldiers by any stretch of the word were required to practice self-defense or, you know, if we're being realistic, acts of aggression against native peoples.
Yes. And also to that same respect, forced to learn how to protect their area and mm-hmm. their people. Yeah.
And what's interesting is that this militia control at the time, these people, like let's say Matt Knoll,
this office.
Great. Perfect. We don't have to name everyone.
Yeah.
Let's say this office is a town in a very isolated area of colonial, what will become America, right? Before Amerigo Vespucci, I think his name was, right? And didn't he write a pretty much softcore pornography about I'm pretty sure he did.
Oh.
It's true. Anyway, they'll call it America later. And so they're living in the colonies, this office of ours, and have no connection with the greater colonial power. So they are required to fend for themselves, which means that every able-bodied person must be capable of grabbing a firearm, right, of some sort, or a weapon.
A musket.
A musket, yes. And from this concept of localized military response or self-defense response arrives what we call a militia. And nowadays, you know, that's a tricky word. It's one of the words that has an evolving meaning. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting because what you just described makes perfect sense. There was a need for these groups. They filled a very functional purpose in protecting certain areas, et cetera, and they kind of bolstered the actual military force, and it was sort of a supplement to it. And the way the word has sort of evolved today, it kind of, to me, maybe I'm wrong in this, correct me if I am, but has sort of a negative connotation. It sort of feels like, you know, people just heavily arming themselves just in case the government, you know, comes after them.
So I think that negative connotation, at least for me, and I can't say exactly when it originated because I don't think I'm old enough to know exactly how early on that was. But in my world, it was reading and hearing about Waco and Ruby Ridge. That's where the negative connotation of what people in the news were calling militia. That's where that came from for me.
Oh, you know,
that makes sense. And I was, you know, we're about the same age, and that's definitely where I started hearing the term. And that is the connotation that I have as well.
And when there were a couple of congressional hearings where there were militia leaders who were being interviewed. I remember watching a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm several hundred years old. So during the first.
Only several hundred?
Oh, Matt, don't embarrass me. No, this is a great point because listeners, you have been familiar with the militia. We have a lot of people who are tuning in right now, from a place that is not the U.S. And trust us, guys, we are acutely aware of how strange this sort of thing can seem, right, to someone who doesn't live here. And it's weird to us because get this, ladies and gentlemen, nowhere in the Constitution is the term militia actually defined. It is used, but it is not defined. So it's a tricky thing and it's kind of legalistic, but we ask ourselves what they're talking about. Would our opinion of a militia today jibe with the framers of the Constitution's opinion of what a militia is?
And the fact that it's mentioned in the same sentence as the right to bear arms is definitely a big deal for some of these groups today, you know? And like I said, it's all about this entitlement that we can have as many guns as we want because we need to be able to defend ourselves. And then this word militia comes into the picture where it becomes like a matter of organizing and having groups of these like-minded individuals and not necessarily as much of a purpose overtly that we can see, but you know, folks in these groups might argue differently.
Oh yeah. And real quick, I just want to say my favorite joke of the entire Constitution is the idea that it was the right to bear arms, not to carry weapons, but the right to the limbs of
to bear arms.
Ursine creatures. Yeah. I thought it was so clever in fourth grade civics, and I still think it, I still just hope it's true.
Okay, you gotta tell me, is in your mind and in this joke, is it the right to carry around bare arms, to have, like, physically,
the arms
you have bare arms?
You would have to talk to the framers. That's it's very open-ended.
Right, okay. Yeah, I'm not, I believe that, I believe that the Constitution, like the Word of God, came down unassailable. I'm kidding.
Wow.
We have the whole Bill of Rights.
So should we bring it up to the present day?
Yeah. Hey, Matt, what's up with the National Guard or the, what are those?
Oh, okay. Yes. This is something that at least you may hear different things on the old internet there. And we just want to at least organize some of these terms in your mind. So when you hear militia.
We're gonna organize. I'm sorry. Please keep it in. I'm proud of it.
Okay. So a lot of times when you're hearing the word militia, you may hear it conflated with things like the National Guard or the state defense forces that exist. Mm-hmm. These other supplemental military or parts of the military, like, National Reserve, National Guard. They're all these different things. And these are all separate institutions that do different things and are not necessarily a militia, at least by definition.
Right. The framers would have considered them a standing army.
Yes.
And with this in mind, what we're going to talk about, just real quick, we're going to talk about some statistics. And I'd like to, while we look at these, I'd like to make sure that everyone listening, that you guys understand what we are delving into today is called terrorism by some. It's called patriotism by others. And it's called a militia by the media. And we understand that this is a remarkably sensitive topic to a lot of people. So the FBI legally considers this domestic extremism, aka terrorism. And what we know is that according to the FBI and the Southern Poverty Law Center, this stuff is on the rise. So the Southern Poverty Law Center has some numbers from 2013 and a little bit earlier. There was an explosive growth in militias that lines up or correlates with the election of Barack Obama.
Yes, you can see the numbers were kind of dwindling in the late 90s
mm-hmm.
and into the early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, there were around 200 of these Patriot and militia groups, at least tracked by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Then in 2009, just 1 year later, there are upwards of 650 groups that are official. And now, you know, maybe they're just announced that year.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Reaching an all-time high of over 1,300 in 2012.
I don't want to paint with too broad a brush here, mm-hmm. but it does seem to me that most of these groups are, you know, going to be more on the conservative Republican side. Is that correct?
It is correct in a, and this is not necessarily too broad of a brush. It is correct from what the demographics mm-hmm. appear to show.
I guess my thinking perhaps is the folks on that side, you know, there is a lot of rhetoric about, liberals wanting to take everyone's guns away.
Overreach of federal power.
Right. So one of the functions of these groups is to protect not only, you know, themselves, quote unquote, protect, but also protect their rights to have all these weapons.
Well, we've talked about this too. This is a country of low information voters. If you are listening to this podcast and you are a U.S. citizen, then I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news regarding your fellow citizens. It doesn't matter what side of the false political divide you find yourself upon. You know, I personally will be honest here. This is just my opinion. The false dichotomy between a left and a right is very much like a rigged game of three-card Monty to me. The House always wins, doesn't it? If you look back at history. A lot of that conversation continues today in the Supreme Court, in bars and cafes across the country, in the halls of Congress, both your state Congress and the federal Congress. And what we see now emerging are people who believe, for one reason or another, again, regardless of what side of the political divide they may find themselves on, what we are finding are people who believe that the federal government is taking legal rights that it does not possess, right? That things that should be up to the state of Georgia or the state of Delaware, the state of, what's your favorite state?
Oregon.
Or the state of, well done, Matt. The state of Oregon are being, taken by Uncle Sam, taken by, the fat cats and bureaucrats in DC using taxpayer supported military might to enforce something.
Appears that they may be kind of tightening the belt a little bit mm-hmm. and trying to make an example of at least a few people.
Ah, yes. Speaking of fantastic segues, Matt, it's time for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. So let's talk about specifically what happened, what you have probably heard about already if you listen to this show. On January 2nd, 2016, somewhere between 20 to 25 people occupied a place called the Malheur Wildlife Refuge in Oregon. This is in the middle of nowhere, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, sure, everywhere, somewhere, not to be rude about it, but it is closer to Idaho than it is to Portland. It's 305 miles outside of Portland. The nearest town is 30 miles away. And as we are recording this, the protesters, the patriots, the terrorists, I feel like we must use all three phrases because they've been called all three things. This group, calling itself the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, led by a man named Ammon Bundy, remains ensconced in this federal facility in what so far is a nonviolent standoff with state and federal authorities.
Yeah, it's strange. At this point, it doesn't even feel like a standoff at all. It feels like they're making demands of somebody who isn't even there. Does that make sense?
It doesn't. It feels like they're not really listening, you know? I mean, and these demands at this point, it sounds like they're like, could you please send us some snacks, you know?
Well, that's, and I don't mean that in a derogatory manner. I'm sorry, Ben, I didn't mean to interrupt. It just seems like every piece of news footage I've seen is just like they're on this small piece of property and they're the only ones there is what it seems like.
Yeah, there's a, there are a couple of interesting analogies I want to make. First, let's walk through the timeline because this story started in 2016, at least in terms of national attention, but it dates back earlier, right? It dates back to, some would say 2001, some would say 1996, some others, I don't doubt, would say 1776. But let's go back to 2001, and we'll give you the background, and we promise it's going somewhere. In 2001, a father-son duo named Dwight and Stephen Hammond, Dwight being the dad, Stephen being the son, apparently started setting fires on federal land near their own private property. They had a ranch. The first one in 2001 was apparently meant to cover up evidence of poaching, and that fire burned 139 acres. Fast forward to 2006, when a fire is set again on federal land as a protective measure. And this makes sense to someone who has experience with wildfire. This was in the winter and they were attempting to protect their ranch, and the winter feed of their ranch that their livestock would graze upon because lightning on federal land set off a series of wildfires.
Yeah. So you set a smaller fire ahead of where the fire may travel and then the fire won't burn over that because it cannot.
Right, because there's nothing to eat. Mm. There's nothing to befriend. I don't know how you guys
fire befriending something. As
well, that's how I feel when I'm building a fire. You start with tinder to kindling to logs, and it's like a social network. Fire makes friends. I know that sounds a little
awesome.
Insane, but that's how I think
I like
of it.
It.
So. And I promise that I am not starting any wildfires. So these guys go to court for it. The government is seeking $1 million in damages. And they clearly did this, or at the very least, multiple witnesses are clearly persuaded they did this.
Yes.
That's not in contention. They are convicted of the crimes. Dwight, the father, receives 3 months in prison. The son receives concurrent 1-year sentences. They go in and they serve their time. But here's the thing. We talked about this in the video. This is where the story might start in 1996 instead. Because in 1996, the laws of the land change and something called the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act is passed. Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty. That's a weird title. Despite the name, the law doesn't just deal with terrorism. It also has a 5-year mandatory minimum sentence for arson of U.S. property, federal land.
You gotta love those mandatory minimums.
Right.
With drugs, with arson.
But didn't the judge view that as being too harsh?
Yeah, absolutely. Dwight Hammond is 73 years old or so. So the judge is looking at the crime in question. Although the government is prosecuting for $1 million, it looks like there's actually less than $1,000 in damage. One other thing, there were 3 firefighters, who were put in danger by this.
Mm-hmm.
They saw the blaze, but again, they're fine and the damage seems very minimum. So the judge says, you guys, this is crazy for that amount of damage or for the crime. 5 years is a heck of a lot. So I'm only going to give you 3 months, Dwight, and you, Stephen, concurrent 1-year sentences.
Dwight the Elder.
Dwight the Elder. Mm-hmm. That's a cool name. And then a very strange, very, very rare thing happens.
The federal government steps in
and appeals the sentence.
Yeah. And they say, no, we're going to need you to enforce these mandatory minimums because this is a serious situation. And go ahead and do that now.
Right. So the feds appeal the ruling and they win. This is the impetus for Ammon Bundy to lead his group, the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, into this refuge, this federal facility, to occupy it. Ammon Bundy, interestingly enough, is the son of a fellow named Cliven Bundy.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, you remember him, Matt, the rancher from Nevada, who is famous for another standoff with the feds.
Yeah, that one was, he was allowing his cattle to graze on federal land, and they wanted him to pay huge fines. And it was several years. It dated way, way back, mm-hmm. right? And
yeah.
And he was just like, nope, not going to pay it.
Now, Ammon Bundy, according to the publication Oregon Live, believes that he was divinely inspired, that God wants him to occupy this to defend the Hammonds and to protest federal overreach or ownership of land. This is where we enter into things very close to sovereign state movements. Mm-hmm. If you ever pass through Georgia, first off, we hope you come to Atlanta and feel free to say hi to us. Secondly, we want to let you know that you may notice some odd license plates or some signs that say this is sovereign land. There is an organization in this state, as in many other states, that calls itself the sovereign state of Georgia. And the names may change, but the idea is the same, that the federal government should not exist and that the highest authority should be the county sheriff.
Yes, or at least we don't. This individual does not recognize the federal government's right to exist here.
Right. So Bundy believes that this is this occupation is a protest against, again, Big Brother, federal overreach, right? Some fat cats in Washington intervening where they should not in local affairs. And also, of course, taxation remains a huge problem. And these ideas, these statements have evolved. Originally, they said they were ready to settle in there for years, asking other like-minded members of survivalist groups, of militias, constitutionalists, some might call themselves, and said to these people, come, join us. And if your leaders tell you not to join us, make your own independent decision. We have the support of the local population. We are fighting for the people. We are protesting for the people. However, interesting thing, on January 4th of 2016, Dwight and Stephen Hammond, which you remember from earlier in the story, they reported to Terminal Island in California to serve the remaining 4 years of their prison sentences. And
yeah.
Via their lawyer,
they're like, we have nothing to do with this movement that is occurring in Oregon.
For sure. Distance themselves. Ammon Bundy, they said, does not speak for them. Currently, as we record this, you know, this is weird because as we're recording it, I'm hoping that everything ends peacefully. Some of those protesters or occupiers or patriots or terrorists or whatever you want to call them again are armed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about this before. This, we've talked about this in Waco, Texas, right? And how, in the video, we talk about how, well, you know, listeners, some of you are old enough to remember the events of Waco, Texas, right? The FBI and the federal government certainly remember what a calamity, what a disaster it became.
I would just like to say it was a massively complicated issue. We have done an audio episode on Waco.
No,
we just done a video on Waco.
Uh-huh.
Well, maybe we'll have to bring that back. It's a very complicated issue where you have God and belief mixing in with weapons and children and families and all these things. And then also the federal government trying to stamp down on things that they view as illegal.
And one could argue that the folks in Oregon, their belief in their right to do what they're doing, to protect what they're protecting, is as strong and compelling to them as some sort of religious belief.
You know, that's an interesting idea because it is ideology at base, isn't it? One of the things that you are probably waiting for us to address regarding this situation will be the existence or non-existence of some sort of double standard. And this surprised me when I read about this because both the supporters and the opponents of those folks at the wildlife refuge believe there are double standards at play, right? You will see this in whatever flavor of social media you enjoy, where someone will point out that this is a country where children are shot, you know, for one reason or another. What people will ask if these protesters, these patriots, these terrorists were of a different skin color, what would happen, right? And some people, this is strange because some people are saying everyone would be behind them if they weren't white people. And some people are saying everyone, they would be raised to the ground and the refuge would burn, if they weren't that demographic. What's happening here, and I don't mean to be too conspiratorial, though I guess that is part of the reason you're listening today, ladies and gentlemen. Whenever a story garners national attention like this, I always wonder what the other stories are. You know what I mean? What's the news that's going to go live at 4:48 this Friday?
Oh, the Friday surprise, buddy.
Yeah. The Friday news.
Sneaking it in.
Well, speaking to that double standard, I just found a story a little while ago. It seems like this is a new development. A guy named Jerry DeLimas, who is an official in the Donald Trump presidential bid. He is actually connected in some way to the folks doing this, this occupation in Burns, and is visiting with them now, in an effort to, as he puts it, get them and others home safely. And the crux of this article is that he apparently warned some of these militia members and their supporters to pay attention to any misinformation that the government is disseminating, essentially implying that they're operating some sort of, you know, psyops campaign against these occupiers.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. That is a tremendously underestimated and effective method, both in the court of public opinion as well as in, you know, as well as for people who were at a standoff or under siege. Marine Peltier, a Washington Army National Guard staff sergeant, was speaking with an outfit called the Oregonian, and she said it wasn't really an armed group. She said some were armed and others aren't. I have a quote from her. There is absolutely no armed standoff. Roads were clear going to and coming from. They want us to know they are simply occupying land and a building owned by, air quotes, we the people, our tax dollars. And that, for them, is a civil, peaceful protest. So
these are Occupy protesters.
These are Occupy protesters. Nail on the head, Matt, because, you know, you can see the logic here, right? Everyone who lives in this country below a certain income or wealth level pays taxes because they can't afford
to not.
Right. They can't afford a tax haven.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the honest truth. And if you're listening and you do have some shell accounts, bully for you.
Great job.
Right. But the point being that most people pay these federal taxes with very little control over how the spending is actually allocated, right?
Oh, yes. That is a very true statement, Ben.
Yeah. It's not taxation without representation. It's taxation without allocation these days.
And somewhat representation.
And somewhat representation. Shout out to DC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not to Congress, but I mean to the people who live in DC
yes.
and have no representation.
Yeah, I still can't believe that. That was something I had no idea. I was completely unaware.
Mm.
Don't mean to throw back there, but yeah, if you live in Washington, DC, there's nobody in
right.
the government.
Well, there's,
except, I guess, the president in a way, but not really.
Yeah, but you know, you can meet senators at the Five Guys or something, right? And talk to them directly. That's something. Anyway, the point being, we can follow this logic. Most people pay some sort of tax, right? And those taxes are allocated to differing things. And one of the things they were allocated to was the construction and maintenance of this wildlife refuge facility there in Oregon. And what the logic of this group is that, well, we, the people, the taxpayers, paid for this. We built this, so it belongs to us. And we can occupy it as we will. That's the logic. So this is not wind forest, guys, because this is a story that is developing. It isn't done. You know, and listeners, I want to put out this disclaimer. We do not know, despite our earlier episode on prophecy, we do not know what will happen between the time we are recording this, the time you are hearing it, and the time people, we the people, whomever that might be, are allowed back into that facility or allowed out of it without being arrested. So with these developments in mind, we would like to hear from you. We want to know if you are a survivalist, if you are a member of a militia, if you feel safe talking about it. And it is not illegal to be a member of a militia.
No, it is not.
You're not breaking the law just by being a member of that club, right?
I would like to say I reached out to the Georgia State Militia, at least on the official website for the Georgia State Militia, and I wrote an email to the PR email there, and I did twice, and I was just trying to reach out and see if anyone would talk with us, and I didn't hear back. So if you are still out there and you can hear this, someone in the Georgia State Militia, I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, you know what? I would love to get that interview. If you think this is just absolute crazy talk, then we'd like to hear from you as well. We want to hear both sides of this. And we also want to know what you think is going to occur. Is this the beginning of something much larger? Is it an isolated incident? Oh, spoiler alert. It's not. Listeners, you might be surprised by how many other times throughout this country's history, federal buildings have been occupied, right? Or have been attacked, sieged, destroyed. It's not just embassies in some foreign country. It happens here. And another thing I want to go back to before we leave is if you live in the U.S. or just live in a time where this country is around, you are living in the midst of a grand experiment, a gigantic, gigantic place. And in terms of reach, it's a global thing. It's a superpower. It's a grand experiment in that we, being the human species, hasn't really done something like this before. We've done similar things, right? British Empire.
Okay,
Roman
so you're talking
Empire.
About America, like the idea of how America functions?
The empire, yes.
Got you.
We do know one thing, though. There is not an empire that has survived. Is humanity capable cognitively, socially, fiscally, and physically of sustaining such a grand thing? Or, you know, we talk about Dunlap's number and stuff, right? Or Dunlap's number, the concept that our brains are hardwired to only acknowledge a certain number of other people as peers or real people, right? And I hope you listen to the episode, everybody. So I won't tell you the number now, but I will tell you it is far, far less than a million.
Speaking of, Ben, and bringing in the idea that there may be things happening in the news right now that this is kind of getting in the way of, I don't know if you guys saw the world stock markets over the past few days, but it's been tumbling and tumbling and tumbling. And, if you follow /r/collapse on Reddit, man, it's fascinating what's going on right now. And I always feel like there's kind of a smoke screen that goes on in the world news that, you know, you'll hear highlights of it like, oh my gosh, that was really bad. But everyone, at least from my view, appears to want to kind of shed their, cover their eyes a little bit because you just can't believe that your 401k or wherever your money is allocated in the stock markets in the world, you just have to pretend that it's not actually collapsing.
Right.
Right? I mean, because it feels like if you look at it hard enough, you start to see, oh, look at these imperfections. Oh, wait, maybe those numbers aren't real. Maybe those projections don't make any sense. Oh, wait a second. I should probably sell my stock. I don't know. The whole thing, it's just, I think that might be where people don't want you to look.
That's a good point. To go even bigger, there is a sense of perspective that is often lost on people. It's lost on me. It's so easy for us in our brief span of time here as individuals and perhaps as a species to mistake the ephemeral for the permanent. Yeah. And, if you look at it in the great span of the universe, we have barely begun to exist. Yes. And so many things that seem to be concrete, unending institutions are at best a house of cards in a windy room.
A glimmer.
A glimmer. Yes, a flash in the pan. And before this all burns down, we'd like to hear from you. I should end on a more positive note. Noel, you've been quiet for a while.
Yeah, no, I just, I found a really interesting article. Apparently, the folks in Oregon, just last night allowed two Reuters reporters to join them and hang out. Uh-huh. And, there's a pretty interesting article on rawstory.com and the headline is Pizza, Paranoia, and Psychological Warfare, A Night Inside the Oregon Standoff. There's some great photos and a lot of information about, you know, how they're kind of like using the facility and the compound that they have there and different office spaces and what they're using them for. And there's a whole section on potential in-game scenarios. So I definitely recommend that for some additional reading for the listeners out there.
Fantastic. And we'd like to also hear any additional reading that you would like us to share with your fellow listeners. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We are Conspiracy Stuff at both of those, and we'll be providing updates, both from stuff we find and from stuff you find. And you can also find us in other places. Where are we at?
Well, you can go to stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com for all of the podcasts, videos, blog posts, you name it, anything we've ever done. You can find it there. And of course, if you want to just send us an email, you can do that.
We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com. For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracy stuff.